Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life.
Hello, and welcome to Namaste Radio. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks so much for being with us today. And today we have another very special episode. We're going to be speaking again with Lee Gerdes. He is the author of Limitless You, The Infinite Possibilities of a Balanced Brain. And we are going to be speaking with Lee today about his brain state training and what that is. If you're brand new to Namaste Radio, we'll do a quick overview of what that is. And then today, I think we're going to be focusing more on the spiritual benefits as well as the physical health benefits. The last time we spoke with Lee, we talked about the emotional and mental benefits of training your brain. So, hi, do we have Lee on the air?
Hi.
Hi, Lee. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today again. And I just want to let everyone know, actually, your book, Limitless You, is on sale right now at the Namaste store for half price. So it's a perfect time to buy the book if you like what you hear and if you're intrigued and want more information. There's a lot more information in the book. So, Lee, can you quickly go over the brain state training and what it is for our brand new listeners?
What we do when we train a brain, actually, or what better perspective would be balance the brain, is to see how the brain is functioning, and to see how it's and measure the functions. This isn't about theory. This is about measurement. And so we're measuring how it functions on the left versus how it functions on the right in the same lobe, and how it functions in the back versus how it functions in the front. And we're measuring how it functions or within each lobe, how the low frequencies function compared to the high frequencies. And so those two measures, one is called balance, left and right and front to back. The other one's called harmony, low to high. There's another measure about resilience, but that's taking it a little bit deep, I think, at this point. If I had a whiteboard and had you all in front of me and a whiteboard in a couple hours, I would love to get into that with you. But it's a geek's dream. Resilience is a geek's dream.
Okay.
But basically what we're talking about on a way simpler scale, when we look at brain function, is we're talking about finding imbalances. And when we find those imbalances in certain lobes, then we are measuring the brain and looking at its optimal frequency range within those lobes and resonating back to it as we look at it in that optimal frequency range, so that the brain will then pick up speed, if you will, or steam or power in that optimal frequency and thereby eliminate its own imbalance. In doing that, the brain is therefore able to begin to self-regulate itself. Now, another way to say that is that you have a teeter-totter, and you have a very heavy person on one side of it and a very light person on the other side of it. You remember those days when you were in grade school and whether you were the heavy person or the light person, you remember the days, right?
So you have to move forward or backwards to balance it out.
precisely. You had to move. One of you had to move, and when that happened, that would bring it back into balance. Now, once it got back into balance, then you would have what? Well, you would have flexibility. You'd have movement potential. In other words, you would be able to regulate from low to high on both sides. And that's almost exactly the physical measurement and scenario that we are dealing with when we talk about brainwave optimization.
Wonderful. Thank you. And before I get into the questions that I have specifically about brainwave optimization and your book, Limitless You, I want to ask you, I'm thinking about getting it done, and the biggest question that I've come up with for myself is, how important is it that the patient, the client, the customer actually believes in the treatment? What if they're skeptical? Is it still going to work?
You know, that's a wonderful question, actually. When my son and I, 7 years ago, we said, hey, look at this information and look at these clients we had at the time, which were probably, I don't know, a couple hundred or so. And we said, now, we're having tremendous success here, right? But the question becomes, is this success because of the placebo effect, i.e. somebody believing in it, okay? So their brain changes because they believe in it. Or is this success more due to the technology? Now, we had to ask that question, and we had to get serious about asking the question, because if we found out it was going to be more of a placebo effect, which isn't bad, by the way. You understand that, right? I mean, don't give a placebo effect a negative veil, because in and of itself, it's a very positive thing. Any pharmaceutical ever is more based on a placebo effect than it is based on the actual pharmaceutical, just so you know that. Because almost any placebo, a sugar pill in a drug trial, is about equivalent to any pharmaceutical, except, of course, it doesn't have the some negatives. But, we had to ask that question, is this based on more placebo or a lot of placebo? And if it was, then we were going to orient our developmental work in terms of the technology to where the look and feel was quite sophisticated, right? We're going to move towards marketing, basically, the look and feel, so that the user could identify strongly with their own brain. And we would have then a lot of what you would call eyes open training. They would be very aware and be looking and hearing, you know, during the training. Or is it based on more of a technology? And more of a technology would mean that we would be technically aiding the brain to change itself. So in answer to that question, we went out and we had two populations we looked at to answer the question. One population was I think, the very best. It was juveniles in juvenile lockup. They were isolated. They were in lockup, okay, and juvenile detention. And we would train them. And training them, use brainwave optimization with them, meant that they would come out of lockup, and we made a deal with them. They would generally give us a salute of one finger, which wasn't very nice.
Okay. I know that salute. Okay.
Yep. And they were, in fact and indeed, teenagers in the utmost of rebellion. And they didn't care who, what, or how they offended or knew it. And they were no more going to believe in brainwave optimization than I would believe that I could jump up and grab the moon. So we said that was fine. You know, you didn't have to believe anything. But if you wanted to sit in our comfortable chair, you're going to have to do two things. First, you're going to have to shut up. And second, you're going to have to sit still. Or the other option was, you go back to lockup. Now, what would you like to do? And guess what they did? They sat in the chair, right? Because lockup, all I got is a cement floor. Come on. So anybody would prefer lockup. Wrong. They would prefer to sit in a comfortable chair. And we took these juveniles and we worked with them in brainwave optimization, and we found out that every one of those brain patterns changed. They changed relatively readily, and every one of those juveniles changed. Okay? So then we were encouraged to know that this was not a placebo. This was, in fact, a technology. So next step we had to do was we had to look at this more carefully, and we had to push on it or test it a different way. So we went to a small community in Arizona, and we petitioned with their drug court, and we took users, substance abusers from drug court who were professionals in their use. They all had, they averaged 20 years of drug use. They averaged 14 arrests and like six
and
or nine
convictions.
We're not convictions.
Talking about pot. We're talking serious, heavy, addictive.
Yeah,
drug.
Meth, crack, coke, heroin, alcohol, X, and then other stuff. All of them use meth. And so also as one of their drugs of choice. So this is heavy-duty use. And I'll get back to the question when you said we're not talking just about pot, because that's one of the actually the most dangerous. People just don't understand that. But going on, when we worked with these drug users, the same thing was true. You know, they could get out on probation. They could work with us. They weren't enamored with doing that, right? Because they basically had to do it to get onto probation, and then we would look and see how they did and how they fared compared to the other population of who wasn't using brainwave optimization, and we found out that they fared really very, very well, and we looked to see how they fared compared to all the rest of the other modalities known in history, used in the United States at least, for drug use, specifically for meth, and that success rate is about 2% for 3 months. And we found out that for 3 months we were 100%. And now we've tracked them for 6 years and we are 85%. So we therefore concluded and spent all of our time and money on the technology and very little time, in fact, on the look and feel. So some people complain about that a little bit, but we're getting there, right? And so as we develop more, we'll be more understanding and careful about, you know, showing people representations of what we're doing with them and what they're accomplishing as they balance their brains. But currently, most of our work over the last 10 years, specifically the last 7 years, has been oriented to the technology, and we don't care at all if somebody believes what we do. The fact is that our technology has been used to train a 17-month-old who was sleeping and who was... she had an oversensitization problem, so if you touched her at 17 months, she would scream. And the only way she could really be held, I think, was basically nursing. But it didn't take very long to help her. About 3 or 4 nights, sessions, you know, an hour or so each. The parents did it themselves. And, you know, she came out of it great. With normal sensitivity and was able to start talking to in a matter of about a week. So to answer that, that's a real long answer for a real short question, but it's a great question.
Okay. And so before I want to talk about the spiritual benefits of brain state optimization. But before we get into that, we have a listener question. With Valentine's Day coming up, we start thinking about romance and relationships. So what can brain training do for our relationships, either for people who are single and looking to meet someone or for people who are already in a relationship?
Well, it would probably work a little differently for males than females, okay? Because our brain patterns inherently are so different. So let me speak on that difference, first of all. Of course, Valentine's Day is a time we celebrate that difference, right? And so this is all good. But for the female, her midline or center line or corpus callosum of her brain is much more permeable than a male's, so she can multitask much better than a male can, generally speaking, about 2 to 3 times faster. So,
and women already know this, of course.
y'all already know that, right? And on the other hand, for the male, he can hone in and laser-like focus on specific things 2 to 3 times better than the female, because that energy won't be dissipated as much side to side. So, what you see then for the female is she's like holding the baby, talking on the phone, making dinner, and planning the menu for tomorrow all at the same time. And I say that, I get hair that stand up on the back of my neck. I've done it 1,000 times, every time it still happens. And the male, he sits down at a computer to do something, or he's, say, watching a game or a movie, and somebody talks to him, and he barely even hears them, okay, because he gets focused, right? And so he disengages from multitasking and very, very readily, and she engages in multitasking generally very readily. So when we look at balancing those two brains, when his brain is really imbalanced on the one side, if it's a lot imbalanced on one side, then he is known to be on the autistic spectrum disorder. Okay? And that's why when we look at people on who have ASD problems, autistic spectrum disorder problems, those people are 93% male. Okay, for her, she's more likely to be thought of as flighty or manic depressive, or I think bipolar, I think it's another way to say it. When she has too much movement or flexibility back and forth. So when you train these two brains, what you do is you make the one brain for him more pliable or more resilient. It can move better. And for her, it's the same, but opposite. Does that make sense? So for him, you're adding more flexibility, which allows him to be slightly more, multitask, say, or more context to detail. And for her, you're doing the opposite. You're adding that flexibility to allow her to hone in slightly better when she is called to do that. So you're bringing the two of them closer together in the middle. And that's where I believe a sound relationship happens.
So when both people are balanced.
When both people are moving towards the middle. Mm-hmm. Let me explain what it looks like when you're far from that place, if I may. When we see clients who come to us who are abused spouses, then those clients are all very, very high in one particular lobe on the left side. When we see clients who then bring, those clients bring the abuser, those clients are all very, very high on the right side. Are you following me? Now we put the two of them together, and what do you have? A balance. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want those two to come together in a most healthy, endearing, life-giving relationship, then both sides would be balanced. The one that was high on the left would come down. The one that's high on the right, that would come down. And now you have the left and the right functioning effectively with both of them, individually and collectively, very much akin to one another. So that is first and foremost in terms of being a good partner. If I worry about, worry is not the appropriate term, my apologies. If I'm more directed to talking and dealing with myself as being a good partner, then I will most effectively be open to and allow the space for finding a good partner. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So if I am single and looking for a partner and I balance my own brain, then I will have the highest likelihood as possible to be a good partner and to find a good partner. If my brain is relatively imbalanced, I will have a high likelihood of finding a partner that's directly opposite from me.
So who's also unbalanced, but in a different way?
Correct. So the two sides then, you know, still make up a balanced state together. It's amazing
because our brain is always trying to balance itself. So if it's not balanced internally, then we look for external things to try and balance it, like a relationship that's...
Like a relationship, like food, like medication, like drugs, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of those things are ways that we seek to balance our own brain.
Thanks for explaining that, Lee. And I have another question about the physicality of it. When I was talking to one of your brain state practitioners, your affiliates here in Vancouver, she had mentioned the original, when you go in, you get a scan done, and that's how you guys know what course of action to take based on what you see. And so I asked if I needed to start having sessions right away after that, and she said, well, you know, if you have some kind of trauma that happens or even a bonk on your head, then your brain state could change. So you might need to get looked at again. So what happens? I mean, I bump my head all the time. Getting out of the car, it really, like, hurts a lot. So does that mean I'm, like, damaging my brain if I just get a bonk on the head?
I don't know. I'd have to see your brain pattern to know that. But I do know that if somebody bumps themselves consistently, that's not a good sign.
Well, not all the time, but, you know, I mean, every time, once in a while, people bump into things.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, we all do that. And generally, it depends on the severity of the bump. You know, if I'm running and run into a door, that could be pretty severe. If I'm just closing the door and I bump my head with it, that's probably not so severe, not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do have, in fact, tremendous resiliency in our brain patterns and our capability too, and it that kind of bump wouldn't show up that much, and would go away immediately, any way you looked at it. But if I had a bad bump, if I had a traumatic brain injury from a car accident in the interim, that would show up big time, and that would be different.
Okay. Or like a concussion.
Yes, you know. It's interesting, though, when you talk about that kind of a head trauma, how often some of us will remember when we do an assessment, we'll say, wow, looks like you took a really big bump in the back of the head. And they said, well, not really. I mean, I remember when I was about four and I was out, you know, trying to play baseball with my brother and I walked in front of a bat and da-da-da-da, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can still see that usually.
Way back. But and then you were just about to say if someone who is bumping their head often, that's a problem. So what is that a sign of?
Well, again, there might be a blind spot in their vision. There might be an imbalance issue. Okay, there could be a number of things happening, but I would have to see the particular brain assessment data to know what it was.
All right, fair enough. And so, Lee, moving into the more spiritual aspects, we've talked about what can happen, you know, drug addictions, people are doing better, staying clean for longer and functioning better in their relationships and post-traumatic stress is alleviated. But what about spiritually?
I don't want to skirt that issue, but I don't want to miss the initial point of it either. When we think about spirituality in general, we need to understand that each of us, generally speaking, each approaches that subject from a different contextual standpoint, different history, right? A different belief system, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So how we approach the question will matter somewhat in terms of the language we use to explain the degree of spirituality we are experiencing or manifesting in the world. So that's first that we all need to understand, that we come at this same place. We're looking at the elephant from different sides, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, however, we also need to understand that we are, in fact, and indeed, all human. And so if I am human and I have basic needs that aren't being met, it is very difficult for me to come to a spiritual place beyond meeting those needs. Literally, if I am starving to death, that's what I'm going to try to satisfy first. And I better, or I'm not going to be here. And that's what my brain is going to orient me to do. I'm going to be driven to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm going to be driven to seek that food and intake it so that then I can become a spiritual being using this body. But if I don't have any body, then I'll have to be a spiritual being in some other realm.
Yeah.
So I have to take care of my basic needs first. And sometimes if I am deeply affected by trauma in my history, that becomes a very basic need that I have to take care of first. So when, in fact, they went to correctional facilities and did major kinds of studies with inmates and had them do meditation, which I'm hoping that your listeners are understanding that that's a kind of a basic spiritual practice, all right? When they had them do meditation, the results were extremely favorable, but only for a very, very small percentage of people that started it, because most of them couldn't do it. They could not get to that place of meditation, and the reason that they can't was simply because they have too big a trauma pattern. They're too imbalanced. So if you can bring that balance back to a reasonable state of a self-actualization or in this case, self-regulation, then the person can move from there potentially. But it's not an easy process. If the brain can then, if the brain can function in a reasonably balanced state, then you can start building it like you can start building your own skeletal muscular system if you can exercise. And one of the ways you can do that, and one of the things, the areas of interest that you can use, go after, is in fact spirituality. The basis of the brain pattern for spirituality, that basic pattern, is also pertinent for the degree of connectedness we have to ourselves and to others and to creation. Both of those things are very strongly together in terms of functional brain pattern. So when we're thinking about increasing our ability or our spiritual awareness or a practice, what we're also thinking about is increasing our ability to be better connected to ourselves and to others and to creation. And so I maybe got off track just a little bit, but I'll let you answer that. Did I? How are we doing?
Well, I'm curious. It's obvious that you've had the chance to see the brain frequencies, the brain map. I don't know what exactly you call it when you look at the brain, but you've been able to see the data and statistics on a lot of brains that are definitely out of balance. Anyone would be able to know just by having contact and conversation with a person that they are out of balance and having some kind of trauma. But how many brains have you had the chance to check out that are in balance? I mean, it would be interesting to have been able to hook up Jesus Christ or Buddha or someone, or the Dalai Lama, to the brain scan.
Well, years ago, I had permission from the Dalai Lama's office to work with two Buddhist monk masters. So they'd both been 40 years in studying. Their meditation processes, and they were both masters.
Mm-hmm.
They could change their body temperatures. They could go long periods of time without food or water. They had a tremendous amount of self-control in lots of different ways. What I expected to see when I looked at those brain patterns was I expected to see brain patterns which were all very kind of, what I would say quiet. Balanced, relatively speaking, but quiet. You know what I mean? We think
not
of
a lot
of
brain activity, you mean?
Yeah, we think of peacefulness, sort of, You know what I mean? I generally am pretty quiet when I think of peacefulness. I don't know about you. For myself, I think of being relatively quiet when I'm peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have thought a master would have been that way. But the fact is that master can be so quiet that it looked like he was almost stopped his brain. And he could be so active that it looked like the whole thing was just going to explode. And he could determine that. And when I saw those different brain states manifest for him in such extreme ways, I then got it. This spiritual understanding, this depth of spirituality, isn't about achieving one state or the other. this is more about achieving the ability to go from one state, extreme low, to the other state, extreme high, but still remain in control. So it's a self-regulation possibility where the amount of swing of the pendulum is almost from one side to the other is just about 180 degrees. And it was incredible for me to see and understand when I worked with them. And that was first my basis of getting, oh, for crying out loud, I understand now. What I really need to do is just worry about getting someone so their brain is like sort of the teeter-totter balance, right? And then they can go however they want. Then the function can work most readily for them. And as they build themselves spiritually and have spiritual practices, they're enabled to have those practices very much more readily and much more deeply and grow from them much more quickly than they could if they had to work through a brain imbalance at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so it still, for me, got back to balance and harmony. Now, since that time, which was, again, 2004, so I guess that would be about 7 years ago, roughly. So from that time, it might have been 2003, actually. I'd have to look back. But anyway, 6-7 years ago, I've seen a number of people, some of whom have been daily meditators, for instance, for 20 years. But I've never seen any yet that didn't greatly gain from balancing their own brain. It just took them more strongly and more deeply into their spiritual practice.
So, Lee, it sounds like what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that even though these powerful meditators, these people who have been deeply practicing for years and can control even their body temperature, their heartbeat, things like that, just consciously at their own will, even they still may have had some kind of imbalance in their brain?
Well, I don't think I can't say that about the Buddhist masters, right, at all. But I can certainly say that about other people who've still practiced meditation for, and we've had them up to 25 years. They've had a disciplined daily meditative practice, and they still gain tremendously from balancing the brain.
Okay.
Because so understand that a Buddhist master is is someone who has done this work usually for over 30 years and most likely over 40 years and usually for an average of over 8 hours a day. There aren't very many people around that do that. Right? This is an exceptional person that can do that.
Okay. So the person who is a Buddhist master and is able to do all of those things at will does have a balanced brain from your definition of what a balanced brain is.
Exactly. It has a brain that they could, on demand, do what they needed to do and not be stuck in any one kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And part of the act of, or the reality of balancing is so that the brain is not stuck.
Thank you. And so I'm curious also, and now we've talked about some of the spiritual aspects, and I would like to talk more about the physical aspects. Now, many people who go through the brain state training have reported that they sleep much better. They don't necessarily need as much sleep. They don't, when they wake up after 8 hours of sleep, they're not tired like so many of us are. So what's happening there? Are they just having less thoughts, less activity in their brains at night?
Well, what science knows about sleep now, Dr. Lee and I, Dr. Sung Lee is a MD and works with us here at Brain State Technologies. He and I just wrote an article on sleep that's going to be coming out in Brain World magazine, I think, in March. We wrote it. We were a little bit prolific, actually, when we wrote it, as geeks and doctors can be. But they accepted the whole thing. I was amazed. I think it's like 5 or 6, 7 pages long, something like that. Anyway, there are different phases of sleep. And each of these phases is pertinent to the whole. So if you miss a phase, then the wholeness of your sleep pattern may be not as satisfying for you as it should be. So let me give you the real negative side. Let's say that you had someone that was sleeping, and every night for 3 straight nights that there would be people watching their eyes, and immediately if they started to move their eyes, right, their eyelids started to flutter, they would just be touched on the arm or jiggled a little bit, slightly awakened. You get the picture?
Mm-hmm. So you're not getting REM sleep.
You're not getting REM sleep. You know what happens in about the 4th day?
The person gets really cranky. I don't know what happens.
Psychotic.
Hmm.
A little bit more than cranky. So that's only 3 nights worth. You see, now science is starting to look at this and saying, wow, the brain somehow is not self-regulating. And because of it not self-regulating, we are not getting good sleep. And because of not getting good sleep over a period of time, we believe that this, whatever pathology you can imagine probably is connected to sleep.
Well,
and,
I've also
and
heard...
And now they're even be able to start connecting the pathologies to different stages of sleep. Oh, if this stage is off, then these kinds of pathologies will, appear. If this stage is, if stage 3 is off, these kinds of pathologies. Stage 4 is off, these kinds of, et cetera. And it's very, very exciting what we're starting to learn and understand regarding the brain self-regulation and sleep and our not feeling good or our discomforts or our pathologies.
So then with the balanced brain, are people able to go into all of these phases of sleep more readily?
As our brain is more able to self-regulate, i.e. when it's balanced better, yes, they go into those patterns, phases more readily and flow through them, and then that's why they wake refreshed, and that's why their sleep is rejuvenating and their energy is more sustainable during the day.
Interesting. And so I've noticed through reading your books that some people actually decrease the number of hours of sleep. Normally people tend to expect to need 8 hours of sleep, but some people who've gone through brain training require significantly less.
Yeah, I think I would say that most usually the majority, by far the majority, I don't know the number, certainly over 80%, you would be looking at for 6 to 8 hours of sleep. Our needs would be 6 to 8 hours. And if they can get that in a relatively timely fashion and with appropriate light, that matters, then or the lack of light, then that sleep can be very, very refreshing.
And so I'm curious also about, we've talked about post-traumatic stress, we've talked about depression in past episodes. But what about people who have more significant mental health issues like bipolar or schizophrenia, where there actually is some sort of, like, the brain is definitely different between someone who has schizophrenia and someone who's just suffering from depression. What kind of effects do brain state training have on illnesses like bipolar or schizophrenia?
Well, we haven't had a lot of clients who've had various sundry mental illnesses, but we have had some. And here's what we're learning about that. There are two measures that I actually mentioned three measures. There's the left and right, front to back, called balance. There's the high and low frequency in each lobe called harmony. Okay? And there's the way these rhythmically fire, if you will, or pattern from left to right and front to back. And that measure of basic rhythm is we think of as resiliency. So if the rhythm's kind of in the middle, right, that's a good thing. But if the rhythm is real, real high, then the person is very, very rigid. And if it's real, real high in the front, the person is so rigid that then they have obsessive compulsive disorder. Does that make sense? You know, the brain's just firing, firing, firing. On the other hand, if it's exceedingly low, they can't quite put thoughts together and sometimes will have difficulty in formulating speech from thoughts. And so so our third measure is a measure of resiliency. And when we look at people with mental health issues, they will have some of all three of these involved in their brain patterns. So if when we looked at the brain patterns for let's say the few people with schizophrenia that we've had maybe a half a dozen paranoid schizophrenics, those brain patterns involved all three of those. And understanding that when you were trying to reflect in physical space, if you will, you would have an X, a Y, and a Z axis. It would be three-dimensional. So you've increased the complexity of algorithms, you know, by a factor of nine, basically. But I don't know if that made sense to you, but I won't.
No.
I won't bore you with it. Just allow me to say that that every time you add a measure, you increase the complexity of trying to look at what you're looking at, in this particular case, brain function, with a lot more difficulty. So you're also then asking the brain to change itself on three levels and not just one or not just two. And so it takes longer to work with someone with mental illness. That said, I think that four of the seven people with schizophrenia have made great headway. Three, not so great. We haven't understood all of it yet. And, you know, it's going to take us a long time to understand it. But it does take a lot of sessions for those people, and particularly if they're on a lot of medications. Then you're looking at a very large number of sessions. So it's not an easy thing. By the same token, however, others who've come with other kinds of difficulties and perhaps have been diagnosed as manic depressive or bipolar, we've seen great results with a lot of those people. And I would have to go into the database to know the exact number since we have 30,000 clients in all, but I would think that it would be well over 150. 150 or 200, and we're very successful with those folk. They're dealing with mostly disturbances in two dimensions and not the third as much.
And when you were talking about the XYZ axis and the nine, and it made me think of math class. And so that brings up a question for me, and I'm sure many people. When I'm in school or studying something that I can easily comprehend, it's fine. And I can calculate and compute and understand no problem. But when I'm not understanding, I find that, for example, I would be sitting in math class, and it was a two-hour class, and by halfway through the class, I wasn't able to focus anymore. I was barely able to function. I just became so physically and mentally exhausted. I ended up having to withdraw from the course because I just, for the second hour of the class, I was not absorbing anything at all. So how would brain state training help with that kind of issue?
Let me give you a couple of examples. We have examples of people with learning disabilities. We have kids, right, with learning disabilities. And children's brains are relatively resilient and pliable. You know, the functions aren't etched very well yet in patterns. And so they'll change, readily speaking, pretty quickly. And I think those kids probably, if they averaged about 20 to 30 sessions, they're learning disabled, diagnosed, have all been hugely successful in going from the very bottom of their class to like the bottom 25% to the top 25% of their class within a year. Math was always one of those things, which, by the way, I can't understand. I would think that...
Yeah, for you, math is probably easy, right?
Yeah, I would think that spelling would be one of those things, right? Especially with English. But anyway, that was true. And it was amazing when their brains became more balanced, that those functions were more readily available to them. And we've had a couple of them that have been absolute stunning examples. I mean, the last one, who just, her mother is a doctor, and her husband, who's also a doctor, had adopted this girl at 2.5, but the girl was born as addicted to meth. And her parents had kept her, her mother had kept her in basically a dog kennel for 2.5 years. So they had a lot of socialization work to do with her. Now, at 9, she had never passed a math test. And she came in November. She had 7 sessions, and she's gotten 2 100s in January.
Wow.
On two different tests. And so her teacher is amazed, her parents are amazed, but I'm not amazed, because she had it all the time, but it was just not connecting. It wasn't connecting because one side was higher than the other side, and those connections couldn't readily happen. And it was higher on one side than the other side because she had trauma prints. The brain was like that, because at one point in time, even as a fetus, she was insulted with chemicals, and now it developed that pattern to keep her alive. That's a wonderful thing, and now it didn't know enough to leave that pattern. As we reflected it back to itself, and it resonated in a balanced state, and then assumed that balanced state for itself, aha! Now it can do all kinds of things that it hadn't done before. So generally speaking, when we find that in a student, we find that it's not the brain that's lacking. It's not the person that's lacking. It's not anything called stupidity. It's not anything called lack of motivation. It is, in fact and indeed, an imbalance. And when we correct that, or when that is corrected, more appropriately spoken, when that is corrected, that person is able to start thinking more clearly and functioning more capably. Way beyond anything that they would have previously imagined, by the way. If you would ask that little girl in December if she would have ever got 100 on a math test, she would have said, yeah, right. You know? I mean, this isn't something that she believed could happen.
So it sounds almost like, I mean, we know what an IQ test is. And so some people have low IQs, some people have high IQs. It sounds almost like if everyone had a balanced brain, we'd have much more similarity in levels of IQ.
I think people who meditate will, generally speaking, if somebody takes an IQ test, does diligently works for a year's time in daily meditation, I think if they take an IQ test 1 year later, they will have a higher score. How's that?
All right, that's fair enough. So
if they balance their brain in a week or 10 days, they'll have a dramatically higher score.
So a higher score with a year of meditation, but balancing the brain even higher.
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
So if someone was to meditate for a year, you're saying theoretically they would have a somewhat higher IQ score, but if someone was to go through brain state training, they would have a significantly higher IQ score.
Correct.
Okay.
You would go faster, further.
All right, fair enough. And so we have just a few minutes left in the show, but I notice we have a caller who wants to ask a question. Are you ready to take a question?
Sure.
Okay. So from area code 305, we'll have to make this quick. You're on the air.
Hey, Marie. Hi, this is Diana in Miami. Very interesting show. I missed the first 3 minutes. Do you take volunteer subjects? Be happy to participate. I'm probably far from you. And can you give the information on the website before 5 o'clock hits?
Hi, we do sign people up to be a student in our classrooms. We have classrooms where we teach people licensing our technology, how to use our technology, and those classrooms are all supervised by trained brainwave optimization technologists. And we do allow people to come in to those classes, and we train them based on their ability to pay. And so if you contact us through our website at brainstatetech.com, you can send in an informational note or call the office at 480-588-6840. And they can then try to schedule you, if you're going to be in this area, they can try to schedule you for to be a client in our education class.
Wonderful. So thank you so much for asking that question. Caller, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Hello?
Can you also give his name? I did hear Dr. Lee, and you called him Lee, but I haven't gotten the rest of it. And the name
Lee
of the book.
Gerdes. His name is Lee Gerdes, and that's spelled G-E-R-D-E-S. And the website, again, is brainstatetech.com, T-E-C-H, brainstatetech.com. That's right, Lee?
Yep, correct.
Yeah. Okay. And I just want to let everyone know also that at namastepublishing.com right now, if you want more information about brain state training, Lee's book, Limitless You, The Infinite Possibilities of a Balanced Brain, is on sale for 50% off right now at namastepublishing.com. So it's a really special offer for a limited time. So Limitless You is the name of the book, and you can go to namastepublishing.com. You can also find the book at your website, I believe, brainstatetech.com. Correct?
Okay, correct.
Yeah. Okay, so before we wrap up the show, I was actually going to ask you about people who are in financial need, and it sounds like if they're able to get to Arizona, you can actually work with them on it.
Yeah, I'm sorry I'm laughing. To give you some idea, a few years ago, we did a survey of what we had done for the previous, 7 years or so, and my son came in to me, and he said, "Dad, do you know how many sessions for people we give away rather than being compensated for them?" And I said, "Well, I suppose like 30%. And he said, "Dad, it's something like 72 or 74%. We've got to stop this." And I thought, well, either A, have to be win the lottery, or C, or B, I'm going to have to ask people to compensate us, because if, I'm gonna go broke here for sure. And so, what we've done in order to do that is we've invited people to petition us if they need us, and work with us in the class. And that way, we do have a training center here, but there are also training centers around the country, around the world. And so if you will reach out to them, there's sometimes opportunities that you can, put together, paying them certain amount on time, or, using a credit card, or making a trade of some kind of work or something, which bartering, I think, is a wonderful opportunity for everybody. I could do a little gardening or clean a little bit of a house sometimes and get something that I needed for that. So I would encourage that, kind of reaching out to a local affiliate for anyone that's thinking about brainwave optimization but may feel they don't have necessary funds.
Great. And then so if they're looking for the other training centers, is that also on your website, brainstatetech.com?
Correct, and it's under locations, and you can see it by country and state.
Wonderful. So,
and we have about 130 or so in about 15 countries.
Wow. Excellent. So, Lee, we're out of time now. We've actually gone a little bit over time. So I'm wondering if there's anything that you would like to add that you feel is really important that we haven't talked about yet.
The one thing that I think is really important that's most important is this. If you feel that in your lifetime, as a listener, you have done things that you're not pleased with or have not been helpful, and or if you feel that others have done things to you that you are not pleased with and have not been helpful, then please consider the possibility that those things were done as reaction to an imbalance in the brain. And if you can at least engender, at least consider that as a possibility, I believe, then you will also consider the possibility that forgiveness can be, for yourself and others, can be at the very center of your life, and you will be freed to be like probably you've not been before.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Lee, for being on the show today. It's been such a pleasure.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Have a great day, Lee.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
So, again, that was Lee Gerdes, and he is the author of Limitless You, The Infinite Possibilities of a Balanced Brain, and that is on sale right now at namastepublishing.com in our store for 50% off. So if you're thinking about getting the book, now is the time to get it. Limitless You is the name of the book, namastepublishing.com. And if you're interested in more information about Lee, you want to contact him, you want to get a session for brain state training, you want to go through the series of sessions, then go to his website, brainstatetech.com. brainstatetech.com, and tech is T-E-C-H, brainstatetech.com. It has been such a pleasure serving you with this hour of Namaste Radio. I hope that you have a wonderful day. We will see you again in 2 weeks' time. We'll be speaking with Wade Lightheart in 2 weeks. He is the author of Vital Power, and he is an all-natural bodybuilder. He doesn't use drugs, or I think he might not even use supplements. I'll have to ask him about that. But it's going to be a really interesting hour because he's going to be talking about health and longevity, because the month of February is all about health at namastepublishing.com. So thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks. And as always, you can always check out our archives here at blogtalkradio.com/namasteradio. All of our shows are listed in the archives. If you've missed part of this show or another show, you can go back and listen anytime. So have a wonderful week. Be well. Namaste.
Thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend, favorite the show, and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.